Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. If you'd like to call into the show, the phone number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. There's a lot of material I'd like to cover in today's show, so let's get to it. Over this past week, there was yet another Democrat presidential debate. I'll spare you the details of that because, frankly, I can't bring myself to watch those things. We're relying instead on the highlights of them from people who did, but in this case, we've had so many of them, I just don't have any real interest at this point. More importantly, over the past week, we did see the U.S. Senate impeachment trial of President Trump conclude, resulting in the Republican majority, with the exception of never-Trumper and panderer to the political left, Utah Senator Mitt Romney, voting for his acquittal on all charges brought by the Democrat-controlled House of Representatives. After a brief discussion of this, I want to explore what I consider to be one of the main reasons we have in our country today this great political divide, with so many embracing the ideology of the left and battling to transform America into their vision of a socialist utopia. I also want to take a look at the outbreak of the feared new coronavirus in communist China and its implications for the world's populations. We don't yet know just how bad this outbreak is, but increasingly it is appearing to be very dangerous. Getting back to the impeachment, here's a short report on the Senate impeachment acquittal of Trump as presented by the British Broadcasting Corporation News on February 5. Play soundbite one, please.
In the last half hour, the U.S. Senate has found President Trump not guilty of abuse of power and the obstruction of Congress in his historic impeachment trial. Donald Trump had been charged with high crimes and misdemeanors by the members of the House of Representatives. But as expected, the Republican majority in the Senate cleared him, which means he will fight for re-election in November. Our North America editor John Sopel reports.
Senators, how say you? Is the respondent Donald John Trump guilty or not guilty?
A process that started last September came to an end today, with senators voting one by one on the two articles of impeachment.
Mr. Alexander, not guilty. Ms. Baldwin. Guilty. Ms. Baldwin, guilty.
And then the verdict.
It is therefore ordered and adjudged that the said Donald John Trump be, and he is hereby, acquitted of the charges in said articles.
But the wall of Republican unity was broken by Mitt Romney. The former presidential candidate, with a bombshell speech, said he would vote to convict the president of abuse of office.
The grave question the Constitution tasks senators to answer is whether the president committed an act so extreme and egregious that it rises to the level of a high crime and misdemeanor. Yes, he did.
With the impeachment process now behind him, Donald Trump is seeing his approval ratings inching up. The Republican Party is standing right behind him, and the Democrats have had a shocking few days after the shambles of the Iowa caucus. It's all turning out to be a very good week for Donald Trump.
And last night he delivered a highly partisan State of the Union address that could have been from a Republican rally. But the shadow of impeachment couldn't be missed, as Donald Trump pointedly snubbed the Democratic Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who'd led the moves to impeach the president, her outstretched arm ignored. And the Speaker's disdain was etched on her face as the president made his remarks. And then, in an extraordinary act of defiance, or petulance, opinions divided, Nancy Pelosi ripped up her copy of his speech. In his speech, the president focused on the strength of the economy, something he hopes will be his trump card in this election year.
Jobs are booming, incomes are soaring, poverty is plummeting, Crime is falling, confidence is surging, and our country is thriving and highly respected again.
But look at the faces of those listening, loving from one side, loathing from the other. A microcosm of America, a foretaste of how bitterly contested this election will be. John Sopel, BBC News, Washington.
Now let's hear more on the acquittal from NBC Nightly News on February 6. Play soundbite 2, please.
Calling it a celebration, President Trump tonight savoring his Senate victory.
We went through hell unfairly, did nothing wrong, but this is what the end result is. It's the only good headline I've ever had in the Washington Post.
The president unplugged, riffing for more than an hour.
I never thought a word would sound so good. It's called total acquittal.
Praising a packed crowd of political allies.
Mitch McConnell, I want to tell you, you did a fantastic job.
Both buoyant and bitter, unloading on the Democrats in the relentless string of investigations.
It was evil. It was corrupt. It was dirty cops. It was leakers and liars.
Punctuating his anger with an expletive.
It was all bullshit.
And this message to the people of Utah.
And tell him, I'm sorry about Mitt Romney. I'm sorry.
It wasn't the first time today the president attacked the only Republican who joined Democrats voting to remove him, earlier shattering the bipartisan tradition of the National Prayer Breakfast, with swipes at both Romney and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
I don't like people who use their faith as justification for doing what they know is wrong.
So there you have a couple of clips from the left-wing establishment media's take on the acquittal. Here's another from leftist The Guardian News with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's swipe at Trump after the acquittal and on Trump's State of the Union address to Congress and the nation the night before the Senate voted to acquit him. Please sound by three, please.
He's impeached forever, no matter what he says or whatever headlines he wants to carry around. You're impeached forever. You're never getting rid of that scar. And history will always record that you were impeached for undermining the security of our country, jeopardizing the integrity of our elections, and violating the Constitution of the United States. I don't know if the president understands about prayer or people who do pray, but we do pray for the United States of America. I pray for him, President Bush, still President Obama, because it's a heavy responsibility. And I pray hard for him because he's so off the track of our Constitution, our values, our country, the air our children breathe, the water they drink, and the rest. He really needs our prayers. So yesterday the Senate acted, first time in history that a senator has voted against his own president in a decision regarding impeachment. God bless him for his courage. This morning, the president said, when people use faith as an excuse to do, I don't know if he said bad things, but whatever he said, it was just so completely inappropriate. That was not a State of the Union. That was a state, his state of mind. We want a State of the Union. Where are we? Where are we going? And the rest.
I say it was a State of the Union address, but be that as it may. As you can see by Pelosi's comments, the intent all along of this ridiculous impeachment hoax was to smear Trump forever, as she described it, with a taint of wrongdoing that the left hopes will turn more Americans against the president and to convince them to support the left's efforts to turn this country into what you will hear described later in this program as a collectivist oligarchy. That is, you struggling to survive under the yoke of socialism and the death of individual freedoms imposed on you by the fabulously wealthy power elites of the nation. I'm sorry, but it's frightening to me that so many duped Americans accept, believe in, and endorse all this leftist hatred of Trump and his supporters. There was a fantastic political ad that Trump put out on social media recently, which I understand was quickly removed by the tech giants. It's a picture of Trump facing the viewer and stating that his political enemies are not after him, actually. They're after you. He's just in the way. How true. One quick result of Trump's acquittal was the unceremonious removal from the White House of U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who testified against Trump during the House impeachment inquiry. Vindman, who was paraded in his Army uniform before the media's news cameras and was presented as some kind of super patriot, testified self-righteously that Trump's phone conversation last year with Ukrainian President Zelensky, in which Trump asked Zelensky to investigate allegations of corruption against former Vice President Joe Biden and his son, was improper and implying that it was dangerous for the nation. Here's a report on Vindman's removal from his post at the White House on Fox's Your World with Neil Cavuto, just after Trump's acquittal. Will you please play soundbite 4?
Our John Roberts over at the White House on some fast-moving developments there, particularly with the administration taking full offense on the economy and indeed on this virus. John.
Yeah, and it would seem that the first shoe to drop post-impeachment acquittal is the fact that Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who you remember had concerns about the phone call that the president had with the Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky and brought those to the attention of the NSC's lead counsel, has been fired from his job and escorted from the White House. In a statement that was given to Fox News by his attorney, David Pressman, Pressman says, quote, "There is no question in the mind of any American why this man's job is over, why this country now has one less soldier serving it at the White House. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman was asked to leave for telling the truth. His honor, his commitment to right, frightened the powerful." Fox had confirmed this morning that Vindman was not long for the job, and the president was asked about it as he was on the way out of the White House earlier today on his way to North Carolina. Here's what the president said.
"Well, I'm not happy with him. You think I'm supposed to be happy with him? I'm not. They'll make that decision. You'll be hearing. They'll make a decision."
The press secretary had said earlier this week that some people may pay for what the president went through. Vindman had been detailed to the White House from the Department of Defense. It's assumed that he'll go back there, though we're double checking on that. Also today, a big victory for the president. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, a three-judge panel, unanimously throwing out the emoluments lawsuit against him. Dozens of Democratic senators and House members had joined that lawsuit, charging that the president was making money from foreign governments at a number of places, including the Trump International Hotel here in Washington.
Vindman was once reprimanded by his superior officer for reportedly speaking disparagingly of Americans before Russian soldiers he was training with. Vindman, it has been said, was known as a leftist in uniform, talking up globalism and praising former President Obama. Player in the left's scheme to get Trump removed from office with the impeachment sham. I'm sure he'll find a nice niche for himself elsewhere in his profession, but not with the present administration. Good riddance. As I've long contended, Americans are being brainwashed on a grand scale to accept and support the ideology and goals of the political left. So-called globalism, environmental extremism, collectivism, open borders madness, etc. This is being accomplished and has been going on for decades through the reactions of, among other entities, many of the nation's enormously wealthy and powerful tax-exempt foundations. The NewAmerican.com's Behind the Deep State video series just last week put out a fascinating video titled "How Big Foundations Wage War on You" with host Alex Newman. Let's listen to this presentation. Play soundbite 5, please.
So every criminal investigator knows that if you want to understand the deep state, you have to follow the money. If you want to understand any crime, you follow the money. And so we talked about following the money, and it led, of course, to George Soros as one of the very important people. But aside from George Soros, there's this huge, huge network of mega wealthy deep state money men. And I don't want to talk so much about the wealthy deep state money men today. We'll deal with more of them at a future date. We'll do one on the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and, you know, some of these other mega, mega wealthy deep state money people. But I want to talk about one of the key tools that they use to advance their objectives and to stash all their cash. And these are the huge foundations. Okay, so what happens here is these deep state money men, people like George Soros, for example, who's been convicted of insider trading, is a good example. They make all this money. They loot all this money from humanity using different schemes. Insider trading is one obvious one. And then they stash all this money in tax-exempt foundations where they don't have to pay taxes on it. So Soros puts his money in the Open Society Institute, right? Then you have Bill Gates, who puts his money in the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. You have, of course, the Rockefeller Foundations, where the Rockefeller oil dynasty hides a lot of their money. Then you have the Ford Foundation, which has since been hijacked by deep state radical leftist maniacs. You have the Carnegie Foundation and many, many others like this, right? They take all this money and then they use it. They weaponize this money against the American people. So the Gates Foundation, for example, was one of the top, in fact, the top, other than taxpayers, financiers of the Common Core, the nationalization and the dumbing down, further dumbing down, I should say, of our education system. Before that, you had obviously the Rockefellers and the Carnegies playing a major role in education. And we'll come back to that through their foundations. Then you have the Soros Foundation. Go back and watch our Soros video, which is one of our popular ones. You know, the Soros Foundation then goes out and funds Occupy Wall Street, and it funds riots and Black Lives Matter and Catholics for Choice, you know, Catholics for Abortion, the subversion of churches, promoting globalism, all these different things. You know, there have been several congressional investigations and reports coming out of these activities, and they're worth taking a look at. So, in 2014, there was a really, really interesting report that came out of the Senate Environment Committee, and it exposed this network of foundations. It referred to it as the Billionaires Club, and they argued in this report that this Billionaires Club literally created the green movement. So this explosive 92-page study called The Chain of Environmental Command, How a Club of Billionaires and Their Foundations Control the Environmental Movement and Obama's EPA. Now, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about this report, but we need to recognize it's not just the environmental movement, right? It's all these different movements. Feminism, right, was bankrolled by the Rockefeller Foundation. So many of these movements that we're told are just grassroots uprisings of Americans demanding justice, blah, blah, blah. Absolute baloney. These are grassroots in name only, right? They're astroturf movements that are financed by the Billionaires Club. But I think this one exposing how they've got their fingerprints all over the environmental movement will really show you how they work. So I want to give you some quotes from there. They say that this Billionaires Club is a close-knit network of like-minded funders, environmental activists, and government bureaucrats who specialize in manufacturing phony grassroots movements and promoting bogus propaganda disguised as science and news to spread an anti-fossil energy message to the unknowing public. And one of the really interesting things that they showed in this report is that, first of all, they'll fund the production of, you know, phony studies. Then they'll disseminate their propaganda through propaganda outlets that they also fund, like Mother Jones Magazine or Huffington Post, things like this that are also on the dole of the Billionaires Club. Here's one example that came out of the report. They said, quote, in one example, a story reporting on a Park Foundation-supported anti-fracking study was reproduced by a Park-funded news organization through a Park-funded media collaboration, where it was then further disseminated on Twitter by the maker of a park-backed anti-fracking movie. So that's direct from the report, right? It gives you some sense of how artificial this all is, right? And then CNN fake news picks it up and acts like it's a legitimate news story. Some of the organizations that they identified in the Senate report from 2014, you know, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, the Schmidt Family Foundation, which was created by the head of Google, Eric Schmidt, right, a regular Bilderberg attendee, Council on Foreign Relations, all the deep state organizations he's tied with. Then you have the Heinz Family Foundation, right, controlled by former Secretary of State John Kerry's wife. Another one they mentioned is the Sea Change Foundation, and we've done some reporting on this recently because they were funding all these ridiculous green groups at the UN summit, and one of the things that they didn't want to tell you at the UN or anywhere else is that the Sea Change Foundation, in addition to getting all this money from the Billionaires Club, is also getting money from the Kremlin. Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? So the Congress found out that money was going from the Kremlin to a shell corporation registered in Bermuda called Klein Limited. And then Klein Limited would launder this money and send it along to the Sea Change Foundation, which would launder it some more and then distribute it to so-called green organizations in the United States that all demand, you know, global slavery, global carbon taxes, keep all the energy in the ground, make Americans poor, take away all our liberty, et cetera, et cetera. right? So they use these phony tax-deductible charitable contributions. And, you know, this is interesting, too, because in the report they talked about this might even be a legal violation. They funnel all this money into these 501c3 tax-exempt foundations that are supposed to be for educational purposes or, you know, philanthropic purposes. They're not supposed to be allowed to lobby, to get involved in the political process, to meddle in elections. And yet what these 501c3 foundations are doing that are funded by these billionaires, they then funnel that money that they got tax exempt into 501c4 organizations that do lobby and that do campaign for candidates and that do get involved promoting deep state backed government policies. Now, in the report, they actually argue that there's the potential that this dark money has been in violation of U.S. law. You know, they're influencing elections using these shady foundations and 501c3 corporations. But of course, this is nothing new, and the Congress knows it. Right. Back in 1952, our Congress got really suspicious that all these big foundations, supposedly funded by capitalists, were running around promoting communism and collectivism. They said, well, that's not good. So they set up the Select Committee to investigate tax-exempt foundations and comparable organizations. This was also known as the Cox Committee and then later the Rees Committee. And some of the tasks that they were charged with was to look into these foundations and why they seemed to be supporting communism. Turns out they were supporting communism, but it was even worse than members of Congress had realized at first. The guy who led a lot of these investigations, his name was Norman Dodd. He was the head of research, the staff director for this committee. He had a really interesting dealing with the president of the Ford Foundation, President Rowan Gaither. And so after he was assigned to run this investigation, Gaither called him into his office and actually explained to him that what they were doing was obeying directives that were coming out of the White House, you know, deep state operatives in the White House. And they were trying to so alter life in the United States that it could be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union. Don't take my word for it. Here is Mr. Dodd explaining this all for himself. Check this out.
That what we had uncovered was the determination of these large endowed foundations through their trustees to actually get control over the content of American education.
There's quite a bit of publicity given to your conversation with Rowan Gaither. Would you please tell us who he was and what was that conversation you had with him?
Rowan Gaither was at that time president of the Ford Foundation. And Mr. Gaither had sent for me when I found it convenient to be in New York, asked me to call upon him at his office, which I did. And on arrival, after a few amenities, Mr. Gaither said, "Mr. Dodd, we've asked you to come up here today because we thought that possibly, off the record, you would tell us why the Congress is interested in the activities of foundations such as ourselves." And before I could think of how I would reply to that statement, Mr. Gaither then went on voluntarily and stated, he said, "Mr. Dodd, all of us that have a hand in the making of policies here have had experience either with the OSS during the war or European Economic Administration after the war. We've had experience operating under directives, and these directives emanate and did emanate from the White House. Now we still operate under just such directives. Would you like to know what the substance of these directives is?" I said, "Yes, Mr. Gaither, I'd like very much to know." Whereupon he made this statement to me, namely, "Mr. Dodd, we here operate on similar directives, the substance of which is that we shall use our grant-making power so to alter life in the United States that it can be comfortably merged with the Soviet Union." Well, parenthetically, Mr. Griffin, I nearly fell off the chair. I, of course, didn't, but My response to Mr. Gaither then was, "Oh, Mr. Gaither, I can now answer your first question. You forced the Congress of the United States to spend $150,000 to find out what you just told me. So why don't you squat?" I said, "Of course, legally, you're entitled to make grants for this purpose, but I don't think you're entitled to withhold that information from the people of the country to whom you're indebted for your tax exemption. So why don't you tell the people of the country that's what you told me?" And his answer was, "We would not think of doing any such thing." So then I said, "Well, Mr. Gaither, obviously, you forced the Congress to spend this money in order to find out what you just told me."
So the final report from this organization would blow your mind. You should get a copy of it and read it. They tried to get rid of as many copies as they could. Incredible information in here. And so what this report found was that these foundations were promoting internationalism and moral relativism. They said, quote, "Some of the larger foundations have directly supported subversion in the true meaning of that term, namely the process of undermining some of our vitally protective concepts and principles." The report also said, quote, "They have actively supported attacks upon our social and governmental system and financed the promotion of socialism and collectivist ideas." They said these foundations had used the education system to bring about what the report described as oligarchical collectivism, right? For you people, for laymen out there who don't know what that means, can't blame you, right? But this is essentially collectivism ruled by an oligarchy, right? Think Soviet Union, think Communist China, think Cuba, right? Basically totalitarian collectivism run by an oligarchy. And in this report, they concluded that there actually already had been a revolution. They said the revolution was in the past tense, it had happened before, and that it never would have been possible unless, quote, education in the United States had been prepared in advance to endorse it. In the final report, they said that these foundations had, quote, supported a conscious distortion of history. They said they were propagandizing blindly for the United Nations as the only hope for the world. One of the experts they quoted was an attorney, Aaron Sargent, who had a background in special investigations, especially education and subversion, and he was quoted as saying, "This movement is closely related to Fabian socialism." He said, quote, "They sought to create a blackout of history by slanting and distorting historical facts." He said they introduced a new and revolutionary philosophy, one based on the teachings of John Dewey. And if you don't remember John Dewey, go back and watch our episode on education. This is really the architect of the so-called public school system that today is dumbing down and indoctrinating our children. They used two key foundations to do the education hijacking. The Carnegie Foundation was one of them. Carnegie, of course, was literally controlled by the Soviet Union, right? At one point, it was run by Soviet agent Alger Hiss, who represented the United States at the founding of the United Nations. We actually put him in prison because he was working for Stalin at the time. And so they focused on the international education, basically globalizing the indoctrination system. Meanwhile, the Rockefeller Foundations were in charge of the domestic education scene. So they financed people like John Dewey and his experimental school at the University of Chicago, and later his scheming over at the University of Columbia University. Now, aside from controlling the education system, and in fact, one of the ways they got control of the education system was through securing control of the entire money supply. This happened back in 1913 when they were able to get the Federal Reserve Act passed into law. So in a different interview, that last interview that I just showed you, that was an interview with G. Edward Griffin, who at the time was working with the John Birch Society and had a long history of working with the John Birch Society. This is another interview with Norman Dodd. This one was done by Dr. Stanley Monteith. And I want you to check this out. Listen to what Norman Dodd says about their hijacking of our money supply and how they use that to get control of our education system. Check this out.
Mr. Dodd, what did you find out was the stated objective and goals of the great American foundations?
We found out, Doctor, that these foundations had as their objective the orientation of the people of this country to the idea of collectivism, and thereby nullifying for good and all of the commitment of the country to individualism, which was the feature of the country at the beginning.
Now, how did they go about doing this?
Well, primarily they did it, Doctor, by securing control of what is known as the money supply of the people of this country.
You're speaking now of the money supply that was going into education.
Well, it's the money supply of the people of the country as a whole.
And how did they do this?
They did this by working out a system of banking, which was foreign in its concept, but it enabled it, debt to be what we call monetized, transformed into bank deposits.
Now, how did they specifically set out to influence education in America?
Well, by having at their disposal unlimited quantities of this newly created money and being able to reward
the personalities who were active in the world of education, administratively as well as academically.
Were they able to influence the textbooks or the teachers?
Yes, they were. They were able to see that textbooks were almost produced by on order, and assuring the publishers of textbooks
of the funds necessary to make the publication of those books profitable.
So there you have it, folks. You have these deep state criminals are looting the American people. They're stashing all their loot in these tax-exempt foundations. Then they're using that money to wage a war on America, on humanity, on God, on the church, on freedom, on all of us, right? And if they get their way, it is going to usher in a period of darkness like the world has not seen in a very long time, if ever. So anyways, folks, I'm Alex Newman. This is Behind the Deep State. Thank you very much for watching. Please like, share, subscribe, do all those things so we can get the word out. Very important that we get the word out if we want to stop these people. Yeah, they have billions, trillions of dollars in their tax-exempt foundations. Yeah, they control the money supply, but guess what? All the lies in the world cannot compete with truth. And we don't need billions and trillions of dollars to promote the truth. The truth will stand on its own if you will help out, get involved, share this with your friends, family, neighbors, pastors, rabbis, whoever it is. And until next time, again, I'm Alex Newman. Thank you for watching and God bless.
If you were listening, you heard that our own Congress in recent years and decades ago has investigated these social behemoths and their efforts to promote oligarchical socialism in the U.S., or collectivism as it's referred to there. While it's debatable just how powerful and organized the so-called deep state is, that is, people in the governmental bureaucracies and elsewhere who work toward advancing leftist ideas and causes, there's no question that they have operatives working with these tax-exempt foundations to undermine the ideas and beliefs on which this country was founded, including through the public educational establishment. And vast amounts of money is being spent toward that end and has been going on for many decades. This fellow Dodd they were interviewing was referring to the congressional investigation in, I believe, was 1952. So here we are 70 years later and still battling with these people. What's needed is a very public and concerted investigation by Congress and exposure of the people to the people of the philosophy and activities of these left-wing foundations. But that can only happen if Congress is controlled by people who want this done. Moving on. Obviously, there is more and more concern currently around the world about the recent outbreak of a severe respiratory illness called the coronavirus in China. With all the secrecy of the communists in mainland China regarding the outbreak, which is officially claimed to have somehow just happened to originate in a market in the city of Wuhan, we may never know all the facts about the outbreak. But a lot of speculation has been publicized about the fact that in that city is a Chinese government biological warfare facility. In fact, a major one, as I understand it. The official word from the U.S. government health authorities is that this outbreak presently poses little risk to Americans, but fears of an impending deadly worldwide pandemic persist. Since we're not getting much information in the form of info from official sources currently, let's listen to that quintessential conspiracy theorist the left loves to hate, Alex Jones, his take on the situation. as you might expect, Jones sees the coronavirus as a severe danger to people. On his radio and television broadcast February 7th, Jones played a clip from CNN about a doctor in China who tried to warn about the dangers of coronavirus and who was subsequently died after contracting it, and after the Chinese government cracked down on him, accusing him of spreading rumors about it on social media. You'll also hear from Jones' guest, Dr. Francis Boyle, who's presented as an authority on biological warfare and discusses the similarities of the coronavirus to SARS, which stands for, I believe, Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome, another highly contagious disease which has affected people in the past around the world. And Dr. Boyle reports that this new coronavirus has been weaponized to include HIV and influenza components. There's also a lengthy interview with Boyle, and I had to edit it down due to time constraints, but you'll get the gist of what Boyle is conveying here. And there's also speculation here that the virus may have been weaponized by the government in China to be used against their own people who were political dissidents. Of course, this is all speculation at this point, but it appears that that concept has been weakened somewhat with other people, other ethnicities coming down with us recently in other parts of the world. Anyway, please play Soundbite 6.
From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are broadcasting worldwide on this Friday transmission, and we have a very special guest joining us, but I'm going to go to rebroadcast for a little while. We got some information I got to work on, and then I'm going to come back with all this breaking news and information today, okay? And I have Dr. Francis Boyle, creator of the Bioweapons Act, says coronavirus is biological warfare weapon, and he's got in-depth intel that's breaking that no one else has. And, you know, this type of person has a lot of big contacts at the United Nations and worldwide. He was also Slobodan Milosevic's lawyer. I mean, just to give an idea of the people he's connected to. And he's taking off teaching as a law professor today to give us exclusive information. He sent us a whole bunch of notes and intel that we're going to be going over here. But I'm going to just go to break here for a moment. I'm going to restart the transmission. After we come back from break, we're going to play this report. Clip one, Wuhan coronavirus kills doctor who warned of outbreak. Here it is.
Days, Dr. Li Wenliang went from treating patients to becoming one. The 34-year-old ophthalmologist diagnosed Saturday with the Wuhan coronavirus, dying less than a week later in the same hospital in which he worked. But if action had been taken when he and others started sounding alarms, the severity of the outbreak might have been understood sooner. Struggling to communicate, Li spoke with CNN briefly by phone on January 31st. You could hear the hospital machines pulsing in the background. It was back in late December when Li first warned friends on WeChat about a SARS-like disease going around. Li sent a group message saying that a test result from a patient quarantined at the hospital where he worked showed a patient had a coronavirus. But hours after hitting send, Wuhan City health officials tracked Li down, questioning where he got the information. Within days, they closed the suspected source of the virus, this seafood market, and they announced the outbreak. But instead of being praised, Li got a call from Wuhan City Police. With Li coughing too much and breathing too poorly to speak by phone, we asked Li by text, "How did you feel when this happened?" "I felt a little afraid, afraid I would be detained, afraid my family would worry," Li responded. He agreed to sign this document, admitting to spreading rumors online and severely disrupting social order. It reads, "We want you to cooperate with the police and listen to our reminder and stop the illegal act. Can you do that?" Li answered, "Yes, I can." In the weeks that followed, the Wuhan Municipal Health Commission maintained that there was no obvious evidence for human-to-human transmission, no infection of healthcare workers, and that the outbreak was, in their words, preventable and controllable. And with that, the people of Wuhan continued about their normal lives. Then came a sudden jump in infections. China's central government took over, scrambling to contain a spreading virus with a rising death toll. Chinese state media first reported that Li was one of several whistleblowers silenced by police.
And that's Wei Lin Lang, who's dead. Now, there's massive demonstrations all over China, all over Hong Kong, and all over Taiwan because the government tried to cover it up. And we know it's the same global policy worldwide. This thing is spreading to millions, I'm predicting. It's killed thousands and thousands. It is a bioweapon. We have all the evidence, and there's a big cover-up going on. The best thing I can do is just let Professor Dr. Francis A. Boyle take over, at least for the next two segments, and host, because I know a lot, but enough to get in trouble, not enough to get us out of trouble. But he's a leading American expert in international law. He's represented world leaders at The Hague. I'm not going to go over it all. He's responsible for the Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 89 that was adopted by the UN, American implementing legislation in the 72 Biological Weapons Convention. He's serving the board of directors of Amnesty International. I'm just going to stop there because we don't have time to go over it all. He's a Bertrand Russell Peace Lecturer Professor. He went to the special PhD, only one person gets a year at Harvard, the Kissinger God. He was groomed for them, turned against him. And I'm just going to stop there. He holds the Doctor of Law, magna cum laude, a PhD in political science, both from Harvard University. And his latest book is Poems Against the Empire. And he joins us now for a truly real politic look, to use a Kissinger look, but just a human look at what's happening. And instead of me trying to ask my questions, I think it's undoubted it's manufactured, it's been messed with. Who would launch it? What's going on? Why is Trump praising Xi? Because Xi is obviously using this as a major crackdown. So I respect your view so much, Dr. Boyle, that instead of me asking questions, just tell us what you really think's going on and then just roll through what you know and what your sources are telling. Because I've seen the first interview you gave a few days ago that went viral. We appreciate you joining Owen again and now us here. Sorry I was out of town. I flew back early. About Trump's response, because I'm not just here to bash Trump, but it's true. Watching him sing Xi Jinping's praises while the UN praises Xi Jinping, but then says we're bad for blocking flights, that is truly oxymoronical and just insults logic. So what's first and foremost in your expert mind? And thanks for joining us.
Well, Alex, thank you very much for having me on. My best to your viewing audience again. And of course, if you have questions, you can feel free to hop in because I know you have good sources of your own. I did want to correct the record. I never turned against the power elite. I was pretty much a mole for the peace movement there at Harvard.
No. I mean, you've been on many times. That's right. You were there. They thought you'd go with them, but you never actually worked for them. You're right.
And I never intended to. I always intended to oppose the global odium.
By the way, when I had the Kissinger group try to hire me, the head of the Kissinger group, in front of a crew member, say, you're just going to join us. This is dumb. I was never with them. They just thought I would immediately serve them. I think that's what you're saying.
That's correct. But to get back to this Wuhan coronavirus, it's quite serious. As you know, because the work I did calling for and drafting the U.S. implementing legislation for the Biological Weapons Convention, which is known as the Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989. It was passed unanimously by both houses of the United States Congress and signed into law by President George H. Bush Sr. I was even invited to the signing ceremony at the wedding house. At the White House, but it was canceled because Gorbachev was coming to town. And of course, world peace was, I guess, more important than the signing ceremony. In any event, my legislation was specifically designed to deal with the abuse of DNA genetic engineering as to research, manufacture, and develop biological weapons. So since that work, starting in the early 1980s, I have routinely watched the outbreaks of infectious diseases against animals and human beings around the world to see if there was a biological warfare agent at work. And so I did pay attention to what was going on there in Wuhan. And based on all the sources I could find at that time and confirmed since then, this appears to be an extremely dangerous biological warfare agent that leaked out of that Wuhan BSL-4, biosafety level 4 facility in Wuhan itself. The notion that this came from some fish market is a total canard. That was the leading BSL-4 facility in China. And I want to make it clear, Alex, I'm not here to bash China or the Chinese people or their communist government. Under international law, they can have whatever government they want over there. But this is a matter of world public health. And that BSL-4 facility, we have large numbers of BSL-4 facilities here in the United States, now in the Western developed capitalist world. These BSL-4 facilities have no legitimate scientific or medical purpose at all. They have one purpose, and that is to research, develop, test, use, stockpile offensive biological weapons.
Purely offensive.
Purely offensive, although they try to justify it by saying, oh, we're developing vaccines. Well, that might be true, Alex, but the way this is done is they first DNA genetically engineer the offensive agent to kill people. And then they reverse engineer the technology to develop the vaccine, because you do not have an effective biological weapon.
You don't have a cure without the disease.
That is correct. You can't use the offensive agent unless you can inoculate your own people with the vaccine. So that is what has been going on at that Wuhan
And that's what my Pentagon sources told me a week and a half ago. They believe it's a leaked weapon they were planning for us or others, developing a vaccine for themselves, but somehow they thought it was edited so it would be continuated or however it works, and then it somehow mutated or it didn't work. The live vaccine failed. They don't know. They just believe it was an offensive weapon they were developing a vaccine for that somehow got out. Is that sound accurate?
That's correct. They were doing both, and that's how all these hideous BSL-4 labs work here in the United States. And indeed, President Trump should shut down every BSL-4 facility here in the United States and BSL-3 before this happens to me. But my assessment, Alex, is that then whatever they were working on leaked out. The first reported human case of this was December 1. So it seems to me it probably there was an incident there, maybe mid-November. And the Chinese government has been lying about it and covering it up ever since. You saw the WHO director there, Tedros, over there meeting with President Xi, shaking his hand, smiling to the cameras, yucking it up and saying what a great job he's doing. Well, you know, Tedros knows better. This is a WHO specially designated research lab to engage in the development, research development testing of biological warfare. So you can't believe anything the WHO is telling you here. They're up to their eyeballs in this type of stuff. Now, as for the agent we are dealing with, as far as I can tell, it's what would be called a chimera. That is DNA genetically engineered several elements together. And by the way,
and that's Greek for chimera. That means a cross species.
That is correct. And by the way, this BSL-4 in Wuhan has leaked before, at least twice before. It has leaked SARS, and SARS is just a DNA genetically engineered biological warfare weapon, starting with coronavirus. And then making it lethal. And it's leaked twice before from this lab.
All right, we're going to break. You're going to have the floor when we come back. Amazing. Biological weapons and then legal expert here, Dr. Francis Boyle, joins us right now. And just remember, major Indian lab comes out, says it's had the HIV delivery system welded onto it. They don't deny that. They just remove it under pressure. And now the U.S. government and others won't send out the RNA sequencing of this so people can tell how to test it, because when they get that, they look at it, and even low-level labs can go, oh, my God, this is phony as a $3 bill. We'll get Dr. Boyle's take on that, if that's accurate. That's what others are saying. Straight ahead. Stay
Well, let me continue with my analysis of this agent. It's been DNA genetically engineered. They took coronavirus and they weaponized it with SARS, which leaked out twice in a row. This time they turbocharged the SARS they already had, which was a biological warfare agent, by mating it with the flu virus, which is one of the reasons why it's so infectious. That type of work has been done before up at the University of Wisconsin. This Dr. Mengele Karaoka, he's done it. So it's out there in the literature how to do it. And then third, as you correctly pointed out, the third element is the genetic material for HIV. I read that study when it came out. It was convincing to me, including the pictures. Obviously, I believe the Chinese government put pressure on the Indian government to take it down. So it was taken down. And then finally, it does have gain of function properties. There's been a lot of research going on that, development testing by U.S. biowarfare facilities. Indeed, the Obama administration put a pause on it. It was so dangerous. But then the pause was lifted. And so, for
example, what about the reports it was stolen out of a research lab in Canada by the Chi-Coms?
Yes. Well, let me finish then, and we'll get back to that point. But let me finish the point. So gain of function, SARS has a radius for the droplets of 3 feet. This has a radius of at least 6 feet. So it travels through the air. It has a lethality rate of about 15%, an infectivity rate of about 83%. Those are figures from Lancet. It has an incubation period of at least 14 days, and it is asymptomatic, which means that people could be spreading the coronavirus and show no symptoms at all. So, yes, it is extremely dangerous. We're not exactly sure how dangerous it is. As to your point on ethnic-specific biological weapons, yes, we've tried to develop them here in the United States under the influence of the neocons who believe in these things. That's in the PNAC report. They worked for Reagan. They then have worked again for Bush Jr. Regretfully, they seem to have come back into power under President Trump, but maybe he'll fire them like he did Bolton. We've discussed that before. The Israelis have worked on it. The South Africans under the apartheid regime. However, today's New York Times just reported the first black African studying over there to have come down with the coronavirus. So it very well, at this point, I was considering race specific and with this.
But if
first
Chinese and blacks are so different, then that would kind of preclude that.
I think that is my conclusion, Alex. That's correct. So I don't think this is that. But it's clear this thing blew back on the Chinese, just as these hideous biological warfare agents that we're working on our own BSL for facilities.
Like Lyme disease, we.
How did the lab China doctor there know that this was the coronavirus? In other words, the naming of the virus itself.
Well, that, you know, coronavirus is a common virus for colds and all sorts of things like that. Flu, well, colds and whatever, even dogs get coronavirus. So it does appear that at this BSL-4 lab, they took a coronavirus and they DNA genetically engineered it into a biological weapon known as SARS. So SARS itself is already a biological warfare weapon, and then they super-dupered it, supercharged it, again, with DNA genetic engineering, maybe synthetic biology, to add into SARS, HIV, as Alex correctly pointed out, that Indian study, and the flu virus, and then they gave it these gain-of-function activities. So we're dealing here Ed, with some type of super duper biological weapon that we have never encountered before.
There was a lot being discussed and speculated about there. And while Jones may come off to some as alarmist, I don't have a problem with listening to his presentation and to what Professor Boyle has to say. If you want to watch and hear the full interview, you can find it at band.video on the internet. We'll all want to watch events surrounding this outbreak in China and elsewhere in the world with attentiveness in the coming weeks and take what measures we can to protect ourselves if necessary. According to a doctor's presentation I saw on YouTube, if things get really bad, these measures would include wearing protective face masks and protective glasses or goggles to avoid being hit by the virus as it travels through the air, and avoiding crowds and the public in general wherever possible. But as you heard, if this virus can incubate for 2 weeks with those infected showing no symptoms, avoiding contamination could be difficult indeed. Let's hope and pray that things don't get that bad here in the USA. Well, that's it for another show. As always, I hope you found our content of value. Look for us again 2 weeks from today in this same time slot. Take care and good night.